Well, hi, friends, and here we are on Letters on Occult Meditation, page 128, and this is our 30th program. I got a little confused about the programs, but I rely upon the communications team to straighten me out. Such are the joys of having intuitive Neptune in the third house of the concrete mind. Concretion doesn't mean too much. But anyway, here we have the dangers in meditation from the Deva evolution. And we've been dealing with dangers of weakness and lack of coordination and over concentration on the mentality, and also the dangers from the Dark Brothers. Those four items particularly. And now we have something DK tells us that's a bit more complex. The second point here is more complex. You will remember how it has been said earlier in these letters that contact with the Devas can be brought about through specific forms and mantras, and that in this contact lies peril for the unwary. So this danger is curiously real now, and owing to the following reasons. Okay. So we will, you know, during the Aquarian age, there'll be more and more contact with the Devas, and we have the issue of the great fourth ray coming in, and the seventh ray. The fourth ray around the year 2025, and Master Serapis on the fourth ray is working to bring about a closer rapport of humanity with the Deva Kingdom, which is a very good thing and also carries its difficulties. So this danger is curiously real now, owing to the following reasons. Point A, the coming in of the violet ray, the seventh or ceremonial ray, has rendered this contact more easy of attainment than heretofore. Well, this is again both good and presents as well a difficulty. It is therefore the ray on which approximation is possible. And in the use of ceremonial and set forms, coupled to a regulated rhythmic movement, will be found a meeting place for the two allied evolutions. And there's a very strong hint, and that's why so much caution is being exerted in terms of releasing this kind of information. Masonry, of course, will continue to grow in its power under a seventh ray influence, the seventh ray cycle accompanying the Aquarian cycle. And then, of course, the rhythmic movement, not much is said about that, but I'm thinking about, is it Steiner? Yeah. And his eurhythmics, EU, I suppose, meaning that which is good. And it certainly is invocative motion with an evocative effect. So the two will meet, and hopefully in cooperation, but these methods are not yet revealed. In the use of ritual, this will be apparent, and psychics are already bearing witness to the fact that both in the ritual of the church and in that of Masonry, this has been evidenced. I'm thinking about C.W. Leadbeater, I forget the name of the book, but basically he's looking at what's going on in the, maybe in the rituals of the liberal Catholic Church. And he had also much interest in masonry. I think he probably had a seventh ray physical vehicle. I'm not sure about the personality. The soul was on the second ray, and but there was a lot of the sixth ray too, which brought him in touch with the astral plane. So through the church and Masonic rituals, this kind of enhanced possibility of meeting will be made evident. More and more will this be the case. And it carries with it certain risks that will inevitably work themselves into common knowledge and thus affect in various ways the unwary sons of men. Well, and even some of those who are wary, you know, they know what they've been told about the dangers, but still they persist. It's a bit like the young people having these parties without masks and crowding together, some of them even having the COVID-19 disease and spreading it widely among those who attend in these super spreader events. Here it is in 2020, you know, maybe you'll be reading this at a time or listening to this at a time when that danger has passed and when a vaccine does exist. It's amazing how the fifth ray types can dig in and find what will serve as a preventative, a vaccine. As you know, a definite effort is being made at this time by the planetary hierarchy to communicate to the devas their part in the scheme of things, and the part the human family must likewise play. Okay, and you know, certainly this is taking place in the fourth ray group, in the area that Master Serapis supervises, and maybe, you know, in the seventh ray areas as well. I think Master R and some of his higher initiates will be involved in this. The work is slow and certain results are inevitable. It is not my purpose to take up with you in these letters the part that ritual and set mantric forms, you know, not just invented by someone as a nice thought, but something that actually has been tested and really does work, and set mantric forms play in the evolution of devas and of men. I only desire to point out that danger for human beings lies in the unwise use of forms for the calling in of the devas, in experimenting with the sacred word, with the object in view of contacting the builders who are so largely affected by it, and in endeavoring to pry into the secrets of ritual and its adjuncts of color and sound. So DK simply tells us what is coming and issues a warning without giving us the actual set forms which can be used and will be used. Because, of course, someone will immediately fly into their use. That's how people are, you know. You warn them against something, but if you give them the tools to accomplish that something, they will attempt to do so, unguided. It's kind of a what can I call it? An approach which is foolhardy and reckless. Later on, when the pupil has passed the portal of initiation, and I suppose that really means third initiation, which is a true major initiation, such knowledge will be his, coupled with the necessary information that teaches him to work with the law. In following of the law, no danger will lurk. So he has to be in many ways detached. He must work with the law, the magician, white magician, let us say, must work with the law and with an attitude of detachment. Now, many of the things that DK talks about here are later on, when we have proved ourselves. But he is forecasting what we will be passing through, and he's giving us that kind of alert, which will keep us performing according to the good law and not in foolhardy experiments or in selfish experiments. Now, so this is the first one, dangers from the Deva Kingdom. And I'll make this a little bigger. It's so dark that that only by making it bigger do we really see what we're doing here. Now, point B, the race is possessed of a strong determination to penetrate within the veil and to find out what lies on the other side of the unknown. Yes, this is another factor which will lead them into either wise or unwise contact with the Deva Kingdom. Let's see. Men and women everywhere are conscious within themselves of budding powers which meditation enhances. They find that by the careful following of certain rules, they become more sensitive to the sights and sounds of the inner planes. They catch fleeting glimpses of the unknown. Occasionally and at rare intervals, the organ of inner vision temporarily opens and they hear and see on the astral or mental plane. So there is a progress in penetrating the veils. Now, again, both a good thing and a bad thing. Obviously, we have to get to the point where we can do that, even as Master DK can do that and can advise accordingly. But the danger of unwise experimentation always exists. I know of an individual who seemed to penetrate into the earth and in the search for certain types of earth beings that were subtle and lived beneath the surface. And before this person knew it, there was a hand pulling back and saying, you're not allowed to go here. They see devas at a meeting in which ritual has been employed. They catch a sound or a voice that tells them truths that they recognize as true. the temptation to force the issue, to prolong meditation, to try out certain methods that promise intensification of psychic faculty is too strong. They unwarily force matters and dire disaster will result. Are we warned? Okay, maybe to a certain extent we are warned. And the big problem we see, that one of the big problems is the forcing of the issue. It's one thing when something can unfold fairly naturally, and then another thing when we put our vehicles in a state of prolonged strain, which eventually weakens them and allows for the entry of forces which should not, at our state of unpreparedness, enter. One hint here I will give: in meditation, it is literally possible to play with fire. The devas of the mental levels manipulate the latent fires of the system, you know, the sort of physical fires, I guess we could say, and thus, incidentally, the latent fires of the inner man. It is woefully possible to be the plaything of their endeavor and to perish at their hands. You kind of wonder about this spontaneous human combustion. We have seen partially incinerated bodies who seem to die of their own heat. And maybe Master Moria calls this the conflagration of the centers. It's not the same as their stimulation. It's a bursting into flame, and who knows what else it can do with the dense physical vehicle. A truth I speak here. I give not voice to the interesting chimeras of a fanciful brain. Beware of playing with fire. So I know a man who went through a lot of this, and he speaks with deep respect and even awe about God's holy fires, because I think, you know, he's been in a position to be burnt by them, though did survive. It is literally possible to play with fire. The devas of the mental plane can manipulate the latent fires, the active fires, the internal fires of the system. And man's fires are part of those manipulated fires, and so DK speaks in a solemn tone of voice when he says it is woefully possible to be the plaything of their endeavor and to perish at their hands. So often, you know, in the white magic books, he does speak of the death of the magician for various reasons. Mostly in caution and premature use of powerful words of power, which should not really be employed. However, there are mantrams which do protect, and if a person's going to enter into those realms at the proper time, he will be equipped as well with the mantras, which will protect you. You can drown, you can burn, you can be suffocated. So far, however, the death by air is not current, is not found. Point C, the transition period, this transition period is largely responsible for so much of the danger. Well, things are unstable now, aren't they? And people are enticed and they wander into areas that promise so much, and then they are caught and hurt by their ill-timed and lawless approach. The right type of body for the building and the handling of the occult force has not yet been built, and we might say, especially in the West, which is less experienced at this time, even though occultism is moving from the East to the West. And in the interim, the body is now in use, but spell disaster to the ambitious student. Well, that's pretty straightforward. We don't really have the outer equipment and some of the inner equipment we need to handle the fire and to meditate wisely as we attempt to contact the Deva Kingdom. So often we don't know the timing, it is inappropriate, we're not ready, the physical vehicle and other vehicles are not yet trained, they are not of a sufficiently refined and strong nature. When a man starts out to follow the path of occult meditation, it takes well nigh 14 years to rebuild the subtle bodies and, incidentally, the physical. All through that period, it is not safe to tamper with the unknown, for only the very strong, refined physical body, the controlled, stable, and equalized emotional body under the influence of Libra, I assume, and Venus, and the properly striated mental body can enter into the subtler planes and literally work with Fohat, for that is what the occult does. So these are the reasons why our physical and inner apparatus fail us, why we simply are not ready. 14 years. That number 14 is so important, you know. The 14 influences of the Great Bear, the 14 influences, rather, 7 influences of the Great Bear, 7 of the Little Bear. That gives us the number 14. Then we look at the Great Bear and the Pleiades, 7 major influences, 14 again. And all through that period, it is not safe to tamper with the unknown. For only the very strong, refined physical body, the controlled, stable, and equalized emotional body, and the properly striated mental body, you know, not talking about everything to everyone, but being able to have and to detect and to utilize different levels of mentality, can enter the subtler planes and literally work with Fohat, with cosmic electricity. Well, you know, people say, oh, this applies to others, I'm ready. But there are casualties. along the way. So the number 14 is very important. It's showing up a lot of in Egyptian occultism, and that's 2 7-year periods. Yeah. Therefore, is the emphasis laid by all wise teachers everywhere on the path of purification, which must precede the path of illumination. The old saying again, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Those under the influence of the solar angel are wiser in their more deliberate approach. But the untrained and ambitious, in they go and suffer the consequences through premature forcing. Apparently, there are also unwise teachers. Purification first, out of Shambhala, purification, destruction, organization. Purification is related to the second ray, destruction to the first, organization to the third and subsequent rays. They lay, these wise teachers, they lay the emphasis on the building in of the spiritual faculty before psychic faculty can be safely permitted. They demand service to the race every day throughout the scope of life before a man may be permitted to manipulate the forces of nature, to dominate the elementals, to cooperate with the devas. A difference there. Elementals are dominated, and devas generally are cooperated with or obeyed, depending on their stature. So to dominate the elementals, to cooperate with the devas, and to learn the forms and ceremonies, the mantras and the keywords that will bring those forces within the circle of manifestation. I guess the circle we draw as magicians has to do with our success in manifesting our objectives. So every day, apparently, there is service to the race to prove our fitness as we seek to do these things here listed. And only then can the forms and ceremonies be safely released, as gratifying as it might be to have them in our possession. I think some of the very egotistical magicians reference their own powers as indicating their stature, and that is unwise, because so many of those mantras and keywords have been obtained illegitimately. Okay, our next section August 4th, 1920, we're keeping that century between where we are now and when these thoughts were presented to Alice Bailey. So those are the dangers from the Deva kingdom. And they have this kind of playfulness. And even, as DK says, mischievousness or freakishness, some of them. And we literally don't know what we're getting into. So service is a great protection. I think so. And it does open the heart center, and the heart center we know is a great protector when open and radiatory. Now we deal here with danger from the Dark Brothers. He's already given us something on that. Those who snap the thread and isolate the true owner of the vehicle and then misuse the vehicle, bringing ignominy upon the owner of the vehicle, as he is mistaken for the one who is actually performing the dark deeds, when really, of course, it is the obsessing entity. He says, DK says, I think I gave you earlier practically all that I can, as yet in part, anent the brothers of darkness, as they are sometimes termed. He does rather emphasize that, after all, they are brothers, and so he says there's a lot of glamour surrounding this, surrounding their machinations, and their plots and plans and malevolent executed events, malevolently executed actions. So, you know, there was quite a bit there, and then when we ignore, we may be advanced, somewhat advanced, but when we ignore some areas of weakness in our attitude, areas which we could handle, which we could improve, and we simply let them remain a point of entry for the brothers of darkness, continues to exist. He says, I only want at this point to lay emphasis upon the fact that no danger need be feared by the average student from this source, the average student. I think, you know, there's a likelihood that we may get into the glamour of being the special target or individual to be stopped by the brothers of darkness. Of course, it is also said that such brothers do war militantly against the aspirant and disciple. And maybe he's really distinguishing here between the average student and the aspirant disciple. Let's see. It is only as discipleship is approached, and as a man stands out ahead of his fellows as an instrument of the white brotherhood, that he attracts the attention of those who seek to withstand withstand the good intentions of the divine plan to resist, to cast aside. These brothers who are characterized by chosen evil don't want anything to do with that which leads or demands sacrifice and makes things better. So that is who, if we are really an instrument of the White Brotherhood, then maybe we have to be more on our guard than if we're simply the average student. When through application to meditation and power and activity in service, a man has developed his vehicles to a point of real achievement, then his vibrations set in motion matters of a specific kind, and he learns to work with that matter to manipulate the fluids and to control the builders. Well, maybe some of us are so learning and lay ourselves open to the unwanted attention of these brothers of darkness and the methods that they have to block further good effects coming from such a disciple. In so doing, if he is learning how to set certain matters in motion and to work with them and to manipulate the fluids, I suppose a different state of matter, and to control the builders who are, let us say, both elementals and devas of a certain status. If he does these things, in so doing, he encroaches on the domain of those who work with the forces of involution, and thus he may bring attack upon himself. This attack may be directed against any of his three vehicles and may be of different kinds. In fact, he says elsewhere, may be against all three vehicles simultaneously. So now he'll briefly illustrate this, but let's at least take note that the average student is not a real disciple of great use or considerable use to the hierarchy. Students are students. Then comes the stage of aspiration, which is overlapping, and one's studential tendencies continue, and they continue into discipleship when one, becomes, in the symbolic language, white, like the white horse, white and one-pointed. So purified and one-pointed on the way to becoming a unicorn of God. So let me briefly point out some of the methods employed against a disciple, which are the ones which alone concern the student of these letters. And obviously there's some things he has to leave out. He knows so much that it is necessary for him to choose what he will discuss. Okay. So, A, definite attack on the physical body. And I think some have experienced this. All kinds of means are employed to hinder the usefulness of the disciple through disease or the crippling of his physical body. Not all accidents are the result of karma, for the disciple has usually surmounted a good deal of that type of karma and is thus comparatively free from that source of hindrance in active work. Yeah, so this has very much to do with the physical plane. And one must guard one's body carefully. Pushing too far, too fast, lays one open to that type of interference. The next type of attack, glamour. Glamour is another method used, or the casting over the disciple of a cloud of emotional or mental matter which suffices to hide the real and to temporarily obscure that which is true. So this probably is even a more dangerous condition. The study of the cases wherein glamour has been employed is exceedingly revealing and demonstrates how hard it is for even an advanced disciple always to discriminate between the real and the false, the true and the untrue. Glamour may be either on the emotional or mental levels. Remember, there are mental glamours, but is usually on the former, the emotional level. One form employed is to cast over the disciple the shadows of the thought of weakness or discouragement or criticism to which he may at intervals give way. Thus cast, they loom in undue proportion, and the unwary disciple, not realizing that he is but seeing the gigantic outlines of his own momentary and passing thoughts, gives way to discouragement, aye, even to despair, and becomes of little use to the great ones. So, the glamour of, what can we call it, depression? And forces the disciple to become subdued and far less strenuous in his effort and much more ineffective. And he has trouble differentiating between what is externally cast upon him and what really belongs to his own system without the outside interference. So they are, they loom overly large in the consciousness of the disciple. Another form is to throw into his mental aura suggestions and ideas purporting to come from his own master, but which are subtle, but subtle suggestions that hinder and help not. It takes a wise disciple always to discriminate between the voice of the real teacher and the false whispers of the masquerading one, and even high initiates have been temporarily misled. So there are many, many voices, many words, some good, many bad, and then there's also the word of the soul. Many and subtle are the means used to deceive and thereby curtail the effective output of the worker in the field of the world. So, what do we say? More ways than we have noticed. Wisely, therefore, have all aspirants been enjoined to study and work at the development of viveka, or that discrimination which safeguards from deception. It is this quality, if this quality is laboriously built in and cultivated in all events, big and little, in the daily life, the risks of being led astray will be nullified. So we discriminate on the dotted line, as it were, between that which is of the soul and that which is related to the often selfish personality. Many other voices. And then there is the voice of the soul, the voice of the silence, the word of the soul. So we can nullify these negative messages. A third method frequently employed is to envelop the disciple in a thick cloud of darkness, to surround him with an impenetrable night and fog through which he stumbles and often fails. So we have the cloud method, we have the direct attack on the vehicles, or even on all three together, and here we have the thick cloud of darkness. You kind of wonder, you know, Mother Teresa was doing so very well, and she carried her cross. It seems that she had some need of a spiritual mentor, and she had, in a way, lost her faith, even though she carried on. And that was a great test. It may take the form of a black cloud of emotional matter or some dark emotion that seems to imperil, there's that word again, all stable vibration, and plunges the bewildered student into a blackness of despair. He feels that all is departing from him. You know, it's kind of a dark night of the soul, isn't it? He is prey to varied and dismal emotions. He deems himself forsaken of all. He considers all that past effort, all that past effort has been futile, and that naught remains but to die. At such time, he needs much of the gift of viveka, and to earnestly weigh up and calmly reason out the matter, instead of just, you know, going with the sweep of emotions. He should at these times remind himself that the darkness hides naught from the God within. and that the stable center of consciousness remains there untouched by aught that may be tied. He should persevere until the end of what? The end of the enveloping cloud, the point where it merges itself into sunlight. He should pass through its length and out into the daylight. It reminds one of his experience in the tunnel when he goes through this dark cave and sees different qualities of life and hears different things until he finally overturns the rosy cross and steps out into the place where so many are disporting themselves on the field of green, but instead of being a player, he is a director. The end of what? The end of the enveloping cloud, the point where it merges itself into sunlight. This is what he should do to cure the problem. He should pass through its length and out into the daylight, realizing that nothing can at any time reach to and hurt the inner consciousness. God is within, no matter what transpires without. So we cannot be permanently affected by the outer unfortunate circumstances, because we have that inner stability, the stability of the inner God. What else? We are so apt to look out at environing circumstances, whether physical, astral, or mental, and to forget that the inmost center of the heart hides our points of contact with the universal logos. Now, there is a term, I frequently use it, and I mean the whole thing. But a universe can mean something much more reduced in scope. And a solar logos can be considered a universal logos, and on it may go. What is a universe after all, this island system, as it were? So we can't be sure what he means here, but the center of the heart, this is... Okay. Well, that is an occult hint. Yeah. So, the thick cloud of darkness, the depression, the despair, the tendency to want to give up. Having set one's hand to the plow, one wishes to give up, which is not characteristic of the true and strong disciple. And point D. I think we're near to the point where we can say that this program is completed. Finally, for I cannot touch on all the methods used, the means employed may be to cast mental darkness over the disciple, not just the general dark cloud, which forces us to forget the heart, but something more specific. Finally, for I cannot touch on all the methods used, the means employed may be to cast a mental darkness over the disciple. So, reviewing the thick cloud of darkness. That's one. And this one. And the cloak, so to speak, the cloud. This is somewhat similar to what we've just discussed below, but it does hide the real. And then the very first one, the attack. The attack upon the physical body, or astral or mental, or maybe two or three simultaneously. Now, what about the brother of darkness? He cannot tell us all the means, all the methods, but the objective, of course, is to keep a man away from the truth. So, mental darkness, have we ever experienced that? Sensing the futility of that which is studied and learned, causing us to doubt really the whole procedure, and giving us the sense that we are really absorbing nothing of value. The darkness may be intellectual and is consequently still more difficult to penetrate. For in this case, the power of the ego must be called in, the ego, the soul, right? Whereas in the first, in the former, frequently the calm reasoning of the lower mind may suffice to dispense the trouble. Well, when it goes too far, the reasoning is prevented from being effected. So he does tell us about the relative degrees of difficulty in penetrating the deliberate attempts on the part of the brothers of darkness to stop our progress and to hide the truth. So here in this specific case, the disciple will be wise if he not only attempts to call in his ego or higher self for the dispelling of the cloud, but calls likewise upon his teacher or even upon his master for the assistance they can give. And I'm sure that when things get desperate, we do call upon the teacher or the master, and things will get desperate on this thorny path of occultism. But call in the teacher as well, and even the master. Now, in A Treatise on White Magic, several means of dispelling fear are given, and in some of the worst fears arising because the Black Lodge actually is attacking the disciple, the calling in of the master and even the entire hierarchy is recommended, and the use of the violet light to help dispel the fear. You may want to read or reread that. So, these are but a few of the dangers encircling the aspirant. Master Moria has said there comes a time when the evil forces will gather round and encircle, and the disciple cannot get through, but the disciple can go upwards and thus escape the intended obstruction. So these are but a few of the dangers encircling the aspirant, and I hinted them solely for the purpose of warning and guidance, and not to cause alarm. How to warn without causing panic. One has to be very skillful. We know that what lies ahead will not be easy. You can here interpolate the earlier letter with the rules that I there give for the assistance of the disciple. And, you know, again, we're going to be taking up a letter that says it was written before the Tibetan even met Alice Bailey, or vice versa. So obviously this date cannot be correct. Unless, of course, the Tibetan was having them written down in a different way and then gave them again to Alice Bailey. We're on page 133, and I think we began with 128. Okay, and that takes us to this point. We're discussing dangers from the Deva evolution. All the way from low-grade Devas to higher Devas, and then dangers from the malevolent machinations of the members of the Black Lodge. Okay. Well, let's just say, whichever this is. So, again, reviewing attacks on the bodies, the use of glamour thrown over the disciple, a cloud of mental or emotional matter. And the power of suggestion, which lead off the track and are gloomy and so forth. The thick cloud of darkness, that method. They all overlap, of course. Let's see here. I wish I could do this more quickly. Okay. And then, you know, the brothers of darkness and their methods. All of these are dangers of pursuing meditation, either unsuccessfully or even successfully, will attract attention if we pursue meditation successfully. And then mental darkness. And even intellectual darkness. The power of the ego is needed. In some of the earlier cases, calm reasoning can suffice, but in the later cases, deliberate invocation, evocation of the hierarchy and its superior energy may be needed. And DK seems to hint that they would be willing to help. So this is the end of program 30. And our day is the 13th. And we began with 128, and it goes to 133, and we'll begin with program number 31. And we'll begin with page 133. I think that ought to be enough, and we don't know what day that will take place on. Probably not tonight, it's getting quite late, but who knows, maybe. Maybe. And then we'll, the next program will get into the Dark Brotherhood, the Brothers of Darkness, and there is quite a bit on this fascinating subject, maybe because man is very much on the fourth ray. He likes to hear about the opposite side and what he's up against. Well, on the path of spiritual occultism, he's up against a very great deal. And so it requires courage to persist, and there will be pain, and we have to go through that. There will be apparent loss and privation, and we have to go through that. I mean, what's the analogy to John the Baptist living in the desert and eating locusts? What will the diet of the new group of world servers be? In other words, how will they survive in the coming years? We have to look for parallels between what John the Baptist did as the individual forerunner and what we do as the new group of world servers, as the group forerunner. So we'll get into this interesting subject a little later when I can. And meanwhile, lots of love to you and many blessings to you and from the whole, well, Moria Federation faculty and the communications team, especially that tries to bring you this method of absorbing the teaching. You have to admit, it's a wonderful little book. We are more than it appears. Well, it's not really true. We are more than a third of the way through the book. And it's a 300 and something page book. So that's about where we are. About a third of the way through. And next time I have a chance, I'll be back with you. Okay. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you before long.